This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. Let's get back to our conversation about the rollout of COVID-19 vaccines in Florida and how hospitals are scrambling to meet sky-high demand.
My guests are Dr. George Rolls with Orlando Health and Mary Mayhew with the Florida Hospital Association. Mary, I want to ask you about something that the governor talked about a couple of days ago. He said that hospitals which aren't getting their vaccines out fast enough could lose those vaccines to other hospitals. It sounds like pretty much the demand is such that hospitals are getting the vaccines out pretty quickly. I mean, does that seem like a good strategy, though, to say to hospitals, you've just got to get it out as quickly as possible or else?
Well, look, the bottom line is that we share the governor's goal of getting as many vaccines into people's arms as quickly as possible, right? That is the fundamental goal. And so if that means maximizing local resources and transferring vaccine to another entity, whether that's a hospital, whether that's a federally qualified health center, a large medical practice, we are supportive of those efforts. We simply need to make sure that there is clear understanding about the logistics we just described. Mm-hmm. You know, the appropriate amount of vaccines that can be administered per day, given the safety factors that we believe need to be a part of that equation, the deployment of staff. But at the end of the day, in order to accomplish the state's goals, it's going to take a coordinated community effort, maximizing staff from federally qualified health centers, from medical practices, from the hospitals to support the administration of the vaccine. So we are absolutely supportive. We just want to make sure that people understand it takes time to set up those scheduled appointments, to have the staff available. The worst possible thing that could happen, and I think you may have mentioned this earlier, is to have that infrastructure stood up, have appointments scheduled, have people show up and not have the vaccine available. So the biggest challenge right now, along with the supply not meeting demand, is the lack of predictability of when vaccine will arrive, how much will be provided, so that the planning week over week can be done.
Mm-hmm. Would it make more sense, though, to rather than kind of do it piecemeal and sort of parcel it out to different hospital systems and health departments, or the health department, but in different counties, would it make more sense to have a more centralized way of doing this, do you think?
Well, you are seeing that. You are seeing certainly the state's effort to contract with 1,000 nurses to support community-based vaccination sites. Again, very similar to the testing sites. You are seeing hospitals come together in a region to develop coordinated plans intended to both inventory the healthcare professionals that they all combined have that can support the actual administration of the vaccine, and doing that by looking at, well, how much vaccine are we going to get? And then together, how do we support the best processes? It's also important to make sure that not only are we leveraging community-based vaccination sites, but in some instances, there are home health agencies, as an example, for our elderly, our medically vulnerable, to be able to administer vaccines at homes. We need to leverage all of those resources to do this in the kind of time frame that we're describing.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like one of the biggest challenges is, to your point, Mary, just not knowing when the next doses are going to come from. And of course, there are different vaccines, right? I mean, some you got to keep extra cold, others don't have those kind of requirements. I wanted to pivot, if I could, Dr. Rolls, and ask you, this emergence of a new, even more infectious strain of COVID, do you think that poses a significant hurdle to either the fight against the virus itself, to the point of those increasing hospitalization numbers, or even just vaccination plans?
Yeah, at this point, I don't think there's any clear evidence that it threatens the vaccination plan. I think we're moving in the right direction, and we have an immediate issue that we have to address, and that is a current circulating viral strain that is causing us most of our problems. But there's I think what we have now is a very, very engaged scientific community that's going to pick that apart very quickly. So again, there are unknowns, no doubt. That's going to remain the case for, months and years to come on this and many other, sort of infectious disease fronts. But I would say this isn't a time to worry about that per se. I think we need to stay focused on what we are, especially from the operational perspective. We do get questions, you know, what are we going to do about this new strain? I said, let's think about the strain we're dealing with right now. Let's keep moving. Mm-hmm. And when we get enough evidence to know what the right step is, what type of adjustments we need to make, then those will be made. So there's been probably no more reassuring thing to see than just the amount of engagement there is in between not just the scientific community, but everybody, the scientific community, the community at large, and the healthcare community to address these things as they're evolving.
Are you kind of thinking ahead, though, to what the next pandemic, you know, the problems the next pandemic might pose? I mean, you kind of have to think about that, right?
I've been doing that for the last 30 years. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's no doubt. You know, this is absolutely an unprecedented event for our generation, but it's not unprecedented, you know, for forever. I mean, this has happened before. It's a different experience for us. And there's no doubt that we're going to have to prepare and plan for something else. Mm-hmm. So we will continue to look at this as this is an active response right now, but it's also a learning opportunity for us to prepare for what might be down the road.
Mary Mayhew, before you were in your current role, you oversaw Florida's Agency for Healthcare Administration. You also chaired Governor DeSantis' task force on reopening long-term care facilities. So you've gotten a good perspective on the pandemic from both the hospital and the government side. Does that give you a good sense of where hospitals need to go from here as this rollout continues and as those cases continue to mount and hospitalizations go up?
It does. There are a lot of lessons learned over the last many months. I think we have some silver linings about what is some catalysts for change that have occurred as a result of the pandemic that we don't want to lose sight of. Again, separate from how we manage and respond to COVID, the increase in telehealth has been dramatic. We don't want to lose sight of that. But in terms of my vantage point, overseeing the agency, providing supports to hospitals and nursing homes, and then today in this capacity, the reality is the state and government often, government is not nimble. It is difficult to organize around the kind of urgent response in an emergency. Government and the state particularly are there to provide resources, but the emergency is responded to locally. And in a public health response, certainly Florida benefits by having a county health infrastructure that provides boots on the ground resources locally. Hospitals inevitably are pivotal partners in that response. What I saw early on, and Dr. Rawls, I'm sure, can speak to this, the challenge of the data analysis and the predictive analytics and being able to anticipate how that infection rate would occur and its impact on hospitalizations, the acuity of the patients, the use of ICU beds. We've learned a lot from that process. And truly what was most powerful was the ability to use Florida data to inform Florida decision-making at the state level and at the local level. Our hospitals have learned a lot, in particular around surge planning. I can't underscore that enough. Dr. Rawls mentioned we've had a lot of various crises over the last many years. This surge planning, where you are maximizing your physical plant space, you figure out when to shut off electives, how to convert beds to ICU level of care. There is a lot that we have learned and need to be able to leverage for the next crisis. And unfortunately, we're having to leverage it right now as we head into another peak that is likely close to or may exceed the peak that we experienced in July. I would tell you the one area, though, that we don't have a lot of answers for, and that's the workforce. At the end of the day, we can capitalize on physical plant space, bring beds in, but having nurses and doctors available is our biggest challenge. And of course, right now, the entire country is grappling with that same challenge.
Just on the notion of government, you know, not being nimble, I mean, I wonder just though if it's just a matter of resources. And we've seen that a little bit in Orange County, where if you talk about contact tracers, for example, it took a while to get the contact tracers they wanted. They had to spend a bit of time sort of, you know, getting the resources to do that. Would it just make more sense? Or do you think that this pandemic has shown a need for better resourcing for county health departments?
There's definitely more that needs to be understood about that. When you think about post 9/11, a lot of emergency preparedness dollars flowed to the states, to counties, to health systems. I think we need to take a look at what was the intent over the last 20 years as we tried to support and create infrastructure. I mean, some of it, to Dr. Rawls's point, may simply be, you know, there's some foundation there, but there's something unique about each challenge, about a pandemic, about other public health responses. How do we have a foundation upon which we can build, you know, the IT infrastructure that's needed, whether that's contact tracing, whether that's the appointment scheduling that we're talking about, or the data analytics to predict. I mean, as you know, unfortunately, in government, their IT systems become out of date quickly, and rarely is there the commitment of capital to keep pace with those changes. And it isn't all about IT infrastructure, but that's a huge component given the effort that has occurred over the last many months to support the response. Dr. Rawls, I mean, you may have some thoughts on the IT component as well.
Yeah, and I think just in general, I think, you know, the public health system in Florida has a tremendous partnership with the healthcare systems in Florida. So I just want to sort of make that clear that this isn't, there's not something happening that's unique to Florida because we had some type of deficiency in our public health system. What we have as the most important resource in our public health system in this state is relationships that were well developed before this ever happened. So, you know, there are different ways to do things. And I think anticipating what might come next and trying to sort of resource up for that isn't necessarily the most effective way to use those resources. So I think that's something to think about. This is still, again, a new experience for us. The pandemic definitely has reframed a lot of the ways that we think about public health. How important is this to a community? Well, I think everybody can see now that a massive public health crisis can literally shut us down, which it has, right? But we are still working very, 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 very well together. And I think it's important to recognize the fact that the public health system here is at the table with us on all of these decisions.
What does the next couple months look like for you? Are you stressing out about this?
I don't know if the stress is the right word. It is stressful, obviously, for all of us, not just me. And certainly it doesn't matter whether you're in healthcare or not. This is a stressful time for everyone. We are making specific decisions today that are looking downrange 2 or 3 months in terms of how we're going to use our hospital-based resources, how we might shift some of our outpatient ambulatory-type resources to meet the ongoing needs. This is not over. And as Mary pointed out, when you look at the numbers, you know, we don't know where we're going to be in a month. We could be higher than we've ever been before. At the same time, maybe things level off, so there's no option but to continue to adjust day to day. And, I think there is an amazing amount of resilience that I've seen on my team. And I know I've seen across, other teams and across the state. There's a massive amount of engagement between the health systems. You had mentioned this, the issue of moving vaccines around. Honestly, I don't think there's a single health system that wouldn't do the right thing if that's what was felt to be necessary. We would do it too. So I think that's what keeps that sort of stress under control, is knowing that we have each other's back, and we are absolutely, with no doubt, going to get through this. And we'll be ready to face the next one.
Well, I want to thank you both. Dr. George Rawls is the Senior Vice President and Chief Medical Officer with Orlando Health. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we're also joined by Mary Mayhew. She is the president and CEO of the Florida Hospital Association. Mary, thank you so much as well.
Thank you. Been a pleasure.
Still to come, the holidays are busy for animal rescue organizations, and Orlando Rabbit Care and Adoptions has seen an increase in the number of abandoned and unwanted pets during the pandemic. We'll talk with three members of the organization about trying to find homes for rabbits and battling a deadly disease that could decimate domestic rabbits. Intersections back in a minute.